Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Entrepreneurship Happens. First and foremost, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you can be aware of our latest episodes. And follow us, like, and share on social media. This week's episode, Castro Troy and I speak with digital marketer and podcast host, Gresham Harkless. He takes us through his entrepreneurial journey from being a kid reporter for his family to his own digital agency. Stay tuned. Are you an entrepreneur or a small business owner? Or is your target audience entrepreneurs or business owners? Then we definitely have a spot for you. Become an advertiser or an actual guest on our podcast. We are stepping forward and we'd love to have you a part of our team. Send an email to info@entrepreneurshiphappens.com and we'll get right back to you and get you all scheduled and on our list. See you then.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Do our listeners a favor and tell them who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate, you know, getting the opportunity to be on the show and, you know, love everything that you're doing and building. And I think that getting the rawness of entrepreneurship is always best. So for me, I'm in the Washington, D.C. area in Alexandria, Springfield, Virginia, which is about 10 or 15 minutes outside of D.C., depending on how traffic goes. And I always say, like, I've been entrepreneurial since before I even knew how to spell it. And I've, you know, I was a kid that was selling potato chips on the playground. When I was 10 years old, one of the things that kind of stood out to me is I started like a family newspaper because my dad was in the military. He was in the Air Force. He went to an entirely different country for an entire year. So I was pretty much boohooing like a baby on the way to the airport and on the way home because it was just me and my mom. And, you know, that was my road dog, I guess you can say.
Right.
And but then I started a family newspaper, and that family newspaper was before we had like FaceTime and Skype and all these things that we have to like instantly connect with people. And I pretty much just jumped into Microsoft Word. I put some clip art in and I would just talk about like all the things that were going on in our family. So whether it was a squirrel that got into my grandma's house, or a wedding that was supposed to go according to plan and it didn't. So all that TMZ type stuff was what I, you know, tried to cover.
You were the family gossip king, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. But the kicker is I sold subscriptions, so I got paid for doing that too. And you know, it wasn't a lot of people, but yeah, I was the gossip king. I could call it TMZ now. That's a little bit sexier, I guess you could say. But yeah, I tried to find out about all the dirt that was going on. But I would put like Black history facts. I was interested in sports at the time, so, and still now. So I put all that stuff, you know, inside the paper. And then that, you know, was kind of like my first kind of big entrepreneurship thing, I guess you can call it. But fast forward a lot of years, I ended up graduating from Howard. I ended up deciding to be an English major, largely because I just loved writing, love, you know, content and all of those things, and always thought I was going to go into journalism. Did that. You know, it was a very, very rocky road after graduation. I went straight to grad school, and then I bounced around to a bunch of different jobs, and I eventually, you know, landed back home. When I landed back at home and I was kind of beat up by, you know, jobs and getting laid off and all those things, I said, hey, you know, I've always wanted to do this entrepreneurship thing. I'm at home. I don't have the overhead that I had. So you know, at that time I was turning 26, so I was 25. And I said, hey, let me try one more time and just see what happens. And that's when I started what I now have is a digital marketing business, which was 10 years ago. And then I also have like a bunch of resources for business owners. So I have a daily podcast myself, blogs, video content, all kind of helping out that business community. So that's my windy, you know, road of entrepreneurship and what kind of led me here.
Awesome. It's funny how when we're kids, the things we do then is actually, you know, laying the groundwork for what we do later. It's like you were a visionary at the time. You were doing stuff that people, you know, right. had a subscription going, you know what I'm saying? Sure?
And you, so, and you, that's and awesome. You don't- Yeah, you was the only kid that had Funyuns on the block. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. But I wanted to spread the wealth, so I gave it out to everybody, right?
Right. You had the good
chip, right? Funyuns for everybody.
That's what I'm saying. You had a good chip.
That's cool. That's
so what
cool.
do you love most about being an entrepreneur, man?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the phrases that I always kind of stick to is making a way out of no way. And I've always felt like entrepreneurship, you know, equals hope. And there's no doubt that it's not easy, but I always have kind of had that mindset. And I think once I started to be around like other entrepreneurs, hearing their stories, mm-hmm. what they do is start to say that, hey, you took something that was just an idea and you made six, seven, you know, figures, you made one set, whatever it is, you sold Funyuns, yeah. whatever it is, you know, you took that idea, yeah. you made it into something. So I think I just love the possibilities, and I love how a lot of times doors aren't necessarily open, you know, for us, and especially, you know, for people that look like us. So it's yeah. kind of on us to be able to kind of recreate lanes, to make our own lanes, to make a way out of no way. And I think that's the most exciting thing about it. No, you know, without a doubt, it's not easy, but I think it's just the possibility that if you roll up your sleeves, that you can do a lot more than maybe where you are right now.
Right. Like you said, the message of hope, you know, because in these corporate situations, there's a ceiling, you know, there's but so far you can go. And no matter how great your ideas are, they're not always received. They're not always listened to, you know what I'm saying? And so with being an entrepreneur, okay, you walk into one room and they're not going for it, you can leave and go walk into another room. You know what I'm saying? So definitely love that. So on your journey, what have you found to be the most challenging?
A lot of it. Probably the journey part is, I think, the part that even now to this day, you still kind of grapple with. And I think that me going through the journey has helped me to appreciate it a lot more. And I think that you can always appreciate the things that are great, you know, when things, you know, when you're winning, when you're getting accolades and things are happening. But I think it's when things are not so great that, you know, you, first of all, got to remember that it is a journey, like it doesn't happen overnight. But I think too, I think one of the misconceptions is that when things go wrong, it doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It's actually just part of the process. So I think it's coming to accept that and really just realizing and still working on it, that like failure, when things that, you know, don't go your way, or when you have those pitfalls and things that happen, that's more part of the process. It's not that you're doing it wrong. Everybody goes through that. And that's why I love everything that you all are doing, because you think that if you turn around and you see like everybody's winning and you're not winning because you're going through this struggle, you think I'm doing it wrong, but it's just, there's probably not awareness around like what that journey looks like. So I think that's probably the hardest part, is to accept that and know and kind of even reprogram yourself, because you always think that people wake up and they become successful, but that's not the case at all. So right. you know, it's just like accepting that.
Right. Yeah, we fail our way to success. We fail our way to success. And I always love when you I'm geeky with this. But I love watching on the History Channel. I do right now, I'm doing the Food That Built America. And when you hear the stories, it's like, oh my God. It's like some of these people really went through some stuff, but they innovated things that even now to this day that we're still doing because of their failures, you know what I'm saying? And so entrepreneurship is just that. All those people were actually entrepreneurs, you know? And so, and it's just, the overnight success actually took them about 10, 20 years, you know? And even still to this day, there is no overnight success. It looks like overnight success on the outside, but it really wasn't, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, when you're in the thick of it, you're right. You feel like, oh my God, what am I doing? This ain't it. And like I said, people want to quit. They want to give up and they don't realize that you're right on the verge of what you need. You need this trial and error and things. And even with us doing this, you know, we're trying to give you some tips on how to avoid pitfalls, but you still want to have pitfalls, you know? So I love that.
Yeah. So check this out. you mentioned, you know, with the newspaper and everything, that how your family was, I guess, depending on what the news you kind of put out, was cool with the idea and everything and your ambition. But like going through that, like how are they now? Do they feel your entrepreneurial ambition? Are they embracing it? Are you you got some friends that's hating, like, man, we should have got on with the newspaper. like how's the, you know, how's the circle going as far as, yeah, has it gotten stronger? Has it gotten smaller? What's going on yet?
Yeah, like, yeah, the newspaper didn't, you know, pan out as much. You know, I took the spirit of it and it's kind of been different things. But yeah, those people, they're not saying I wish I would have got on with the newspaper at all exactly. But, you know, it's so funny. Like, I think that was, you asked me about the hardest part. And like thinking back, I appreciate that question because it makes me think about when I first started, the hardest part was that like nobody was really cheering me on. Like when I was a 10-year-old, like starting a family newspaper, and long as I wasn't saying too many things, you know, there's like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, yes, do your thing. I love to see entrepreneurship. But as soon as like when I went through, I want to say it was about 3 or 4 years after I graduated, where I was laid off. I was going to get laid off again from a different job that I took. So I was just like, I felt like I did all the right things. And I'm like, this is just, you know, it's not happening for me. And so for me, it was just like, okay, well, I know what I want to do anyways. And like, I'm blessed enough to be able to stay at home, but let me just try to go for it. But it wasn't like people were celebrating me at that time. Even those closest to me were like, hey, nobody does that. What you do is you work, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, then you decide to start your own thing. So I didn't hear a lot of the celebration that I heard when I was 10, which kind of just kind of blew me, because it's like, hey, I saw these seeds of who I am and you guys were celebrating them, but you're not celebrating me now. So it was definitely difficult, you know, in the very beginning stages to kind of be able to say, like, this is what I feel like I was called to do, and I'm going to lean more into it. I think I know that it's difficult, but it turns out I didn't know how difficult it was. But, you know, you just go through those steps. But, you know, to kind of answer your question, like, yeah, that made my circle a lot smaller, because what I started to realize is I have to kind of surround myself. And I think that's just, you know, friends and relationships and things like that. But I think it's even like things that you're consuming, like different types of, you know, podcasts, blogs, just stuff like that. I started to surround myself with that environment of these people are doing it. And I want to be in that same kind of, you know, mindset and focus level. So, yeah, I mean, it's gotten a lot smaller, and it definitely was harder, because the people you think are going to cheer you on sometimes aren't the people that cheer you on. And that's for, you know, a whole, you know, boatload of other reasons. It could be, you know, they have things that they're carrying themselves. Maybe they try to start something and it didn't work out. It probably has less to do with you than it does with, you know, them caring for you. And yeah, I think that's something I know now, but at that time I was like, dang, you're not going to support me. Like, you make me feel bad. Like, and you just start to doubt yourself. But yeah, it's all those things that happen.
Right. Well, you know, it's a change. Our society is changing. So I'm really excited. I have a 13-year-old now, and I'm really excited for the way things are happening now for kids. Because like you said, when you were 10, people were like, oh, yeah, go ahead. You know, but then once you get to a certain age, it's like, okay, when are you going to stop playing around? When are you going to get a real job? You know what I'm saying? When are you going to get a real job? But that's because it's been ingrained in this country for so long that we got the post office job, we got this job, and we stayed at it 30 years and then retired. And then coming along for our generation, we first started doing that, okay, this company ain't working out, I gotta move. And that's when they started doing where you can move your, you know, you can move your 401k. At one point in time, you couldn't do that. But now the younger generation, if they're starting a business at 10, they are continuing that business, you know, and I'm excited to see that, you know, even for our community, we have some young kids that are still entrepreneurs. So to see the change in society. So hopefully our kids don't ever feel like we don't support them. I know my daughter, she's already said, hey, mom, I'm not going to college. I said, that is fine. You know, as long as you start your own business, I'm fine with that. You know, I don't want you to be $100,000 in debt like I am with Uncle Sam, and I'm not even doing what got me in that debt. You know what I'm saying? So, but like you said, at that point for our aging generation, is like after a certain age, it's like, okay, when you get a real job, when you putting that stuff away, you know? So I love that.
Yeah. So, and, you know, I think, I think the economy plays a huge part in that, because like I graduated in 2009 and then I did my master's, I did in 2010. You know, like I mentioned with the jobs, that was all because of the economy. And like, I feel like I did all the things I was supposed to do. And it's like, damn, I'm getting laid off. Like, why am I getting laid off? Right. Like, I feel like I did what I was supposed to do. So it creates that kind of mistrust. So like, I have my, you know, 8-year-old son, and he said that, hey, he loved drawing. So we're putting in him like these things like, hey, have you thought about doing this? Have you thought about selling your drawings? Have you thought about putting it on cups? Just all those things. But I think it's just a result of like, you know, the economy and the way that things haven't gone the way that they're quote unquote supposed to go. So we have to adjust.
That's true. That's true. I had my dream job. I'm a graphic designer. So I had my dream job. And back in 2009, when the economy tanked, you know, everybody around me, even other managers, they knew I was an actual art supervisor. And everyone's like, oh, you ain't got nothing to worry about, whatever. They had let go one of my guys, and they were like, they called me into my boss's office. I was like, okay, HR just want to tell me, you know, we just let go of your guy. And she starts to spill, well, you know, the economy. I'm like, it's just about a bitch. You know, I didn't see it. You know, I didn't see it. I didn't see it coming. So after that, it kind of puts you in this frame set, this mind. So I totally feel you there. I feel you there. So what is something that you know now that you wish you had known at the beginning of your journey?
That's a great question. I mean, I think I really, you know, to what Castor Troy said, I mean, I wish I would have ran with the newspaper, honestly. I wish I would have like kind of just continued doing and really like pouring into myself and reading as much as I could and just being on top of everything. I mean, I think, you know, you always go through those mistakes, and like, you know, you said, it's part of the journey. But I think that once you realize that the journey it includes mistakes, it includes things not going right, it includes your failures, you start to realize that, hey, I want to start to fail faster. I want to start to learn more. I want to start to reprogram my mind. I want to start to see that, hey, success, failure is the way to success. So it's okay to fail. And as a matter of fact, try to fail more and try to fail more often and just like be a little bit not so afraid of that. So I would say just, you know, pursuing like anything I could, you know, not to say like you're doing a million things, but if I had something that is an idea, don't be like so afraid to kind of try it and then put myself in those situations in that environment to where it was like, hey, you should try X, Y, and Z, just like I'm, you know, trying to do for my son, is, you know, set up that success. But I think that's, you know, something I would, you know, do is just kind of test things out, realize that even like you don't, when you fail, I think sometimes, especially too, like if we have something that's like on our hearts and something that we want to do, and we wait, you know, 20 years, 10 years, 5 years sometimes to do it, we basically like, it's kind of like gambling. You put everything on black and you're just like, let's just see if this works. And when it doesn't work the way that we want it to work, then now we're not, hey, this entrepreneurship thing is hard. Nobody should do this. I'm not cut out for this. When in reality, if you're, you know, a year in, you just take one chip and put it in, you lose that chip, you try again, and then you bet. And it's not even betting, but it's just like understanding that you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, and you just kind of process it from there.
Definitely. So what's the worst event that happened in your entrepreneurial journey, and how did you bounce back from it, and what did you learn from it?
The worst thing was when I got started. When I got started, I left a job that, you know, I felt wasn't the right job for me. And that's what kind of put me on those dominoes falling and just like getting laid off and all of that. Mm. the event happened is that I actually was working at the post office and I was doing sales at the post office. So I had an outside sales job and it just didn't feel like it was the right place for me. So I did the crazy thing where I said, hey, you know, I know I'm not in the right place. I know I'm not doing the right thing. There's whispers of that, you know, us maybe not making it. And you just don't know exactly what's going to happen. So I did decide to leave that position. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, set myself up as far as like, you know, having savings. At that time, I was like, hey, let me do this graphic, you know, this freelance writing. So mm-hmm. I was like, hey, I have this freelance writing gig. I have a couple, you know, things that are up and going. And I have this amount saved. So let me, you know, try to take that step. And I had my insurance for, I want to say, about 30 days after I left. So I told my boss, she kind of felt like I might leave at some point. So she said, hey, give me some notice and, you know, give me like 3-4 weeks notice. So I know. So I told her and then she was like, well, okay, you're going to be gone in 2 weeks, basically. So that cut that out for first of all, I didn't have as much as I thought I would have. And then about 45 days after that, I was trying to stay in shape, keep my mind right, all those things. Cause I said, hey, I'm going to be, you know, going out, getting business and opportunities. And I tore my Achilles tendon.
Wow.
So that's really what kind of put me in that. It was a really, really dark time actually, because mentally I was like, hey, I'm trying to go, like I mentioned, like putting all the chips in. And I felt like it didn't work out for me because I made like what I thought then was like a kind of dumb mistake. Mm-hmm. And it was dark just because I literally was stuck in bed at that time. I couldn't get around. I didn't have to have surgery, but it still was a constant reminder, the pain, but also just kind of humiliation of like that not working out. So, but it ended up, you know, years later, I start to see that ended up being a blessing
because
it kind of made me start what eventually became my blog and my podcast and all those things. But at that time, it was definitely a dark time because I was in physical pain. My insurance had run out. And I tried to chase my dreams and I felt like, you know, I jumped out on a whim trying to pursue my dreams and I landed on my Achilles and it didn't hold out. So it was just like one of those things that happened that I felt like it's probably one of the more challenging things that ended up working out, you know, better, but it still is something that I remember.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, because I mean that happens. And then you have to deal with just mentally trying to stay strong and connected, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, definitely.
Can you hear us?
My mistake. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Mm-hmm. I can hear you guys. In 1 second.
Okay. Can you hear?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry. My speakers must have went out. I can hear you now. I'm sorry.
Okay. You know what? I just lost y'all myself. That's why I turned my camera off because that whole block of you and Cassia Toy Talk, I couldn't hear nothing. So I don't know what's going on. Entrepreneurship is just happening.
It just happens.
So, but yeah, it seems like we're all right now. I was just going to ask you, so what do you think is the best thing that's happened to you so far? Any type of major accolades or anything that's happened to you so far?
Yeah, I mean, I've been blessed where, you know, I'm in the Northern Virginia area. So I was 40 under 40 in Northern Virginia. I was 40 under 40 in Alexandria. I was recognized as one of the top black marketing individuals in media production. So some of those things, you know, and you know, I don't really do things for the accolades, but just like going back to my story, it just feel like it gave me some type of credibility. Like what I did wasn't just like this, you know, kid just playing around of not doing something serious, that I really was trying to pursue something. I still am. But, you know, I appreciate, you know, obviously getting those, and I, you know, will of course try to share those as much as I can, because that's what you got to do just to give you some legitimacy. But at the end of the day, it's more just like, hey, I'm just not crazy. And I feel like when you start to see, and that's funny. And the funny thing is, like, when you have like those close to you and like family and friends that aren't cheering you on, and they're like, oh, you got an award. Oh, you, it starts to make them like say that, you know, you are actually doing something. And, one quick story too, is like, I joined this networking group that was really big for me in terms of like putting me in like in that environment to like think about entrepreneurship, to realize that I can start a business. We did like presentations. So everybody have an opportunity to present, you know, to the group. And it was about 30 of us in that group every single week. And I invited my mom, who had like an embroidery business that she did as a side hustle. And she came and she saw me present. And at the end, after you present, everybody goes around and they say, you know, oh, great presentation, or thank you for doing X, Y, and Z, and A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I'm, you know, this is my first time doing it. So I was like, I'm excited. I'm glad to hear, and I'm glad it's over or whatever. And it wasn't until later that I heard my mom talking to my dad, and she was like, hey, you have to go to this next one because you'll see him in an entirely different light. And it just made me realize, and now, you know, that I have a stepson, it's like, you see your kids as kids sometimes, and sometimes you have that lane or however you see the people that are around you. But it's sometimes when other people are like, hey, you have this accolade or you're doing something, that you start to maybe realize that, hey, you're not just playing around and you're serious, or this is your thing. So sometimes it happens directly where they know. Sometimes, you know, it takes other people to kind of do that for you.
Definitely. I can see that.
Definitely. So, I mean, you talk about a lot of different things, right? And we're just wondering, like, do you have any like crazy events, crazy clients that you've dealt with? And they just kind of like, man, like, maybe I need to go back to the post office.
Yes. I feel like if you've been in business for longer than maybe like, you know, a 30 days, you probably have had those crazy clients. And
say 30 days. Damn.
30 days. It feels like that. I mean, I'll tell you this, like, I still have people that, you know, and these are mistakes that you make, and this is how you learn and you adjust, that I'm still waiting on payments for when I started, like, you know, eight years or so ago, you know. And it's just sometimes, like, you know, I feel like it's a gift and a curse. Like, sometimes I'm very optimistic. And I think to be entrepreneurial, you have to be optimistic, because you have to sometimes see that there is an opportunity when it seems like it's all dark and gloomy. But that optimism can kind of bite you in the butt when you're trying to do something for somebody and you think that they're going to pay you, and they sometimes don't pay you. You have to chase them down and things like that. So, you know, but that just makes me adjust. I think when you take those punches, then you have to realize that, okay, well, maybe I need to very least get a deposit. I need to have a more in-depth contract. You know, you just start to, your spidey sense starts going off. If you're like, this person is like not trying to do certain things that you know, help you to get the project done. So it's just a lot of those things that help you adjust. But yeah, I've had, you know, crazy clients that don't pay. I've had clients that, you know, accuse you of certain things and sometimes come back 3-4 years later and just apologize to you. Don't even apologize. They just kind of rationalize and say, hey, I was going through a difficult time. They don't say sorry, but it's like kind of sorry. So yeah, I'm not going to obviously, you know, spit any names or anything, but it happens. And I think it just makes adjust. The newspaper's out of business now, though.
You sure? Because, I mean, you know, we got to way past the NDAs now. I mean, you
know, he's always trying to give people drop names. Right. Always. Hey. We got time. You get sued or anything. That's crazy. Yeah. But I feel you on that with the, you know, the whole payment issues and everything. It makes you figure out a better way. First of all, a better vetting process for your client. Yes. That's one of the things, because I always see it as, when we first start out, we focus on the money. Okay, this is my living. I got to put food on the table. And we tend to take everybody and anybody. And then we realize, after going through those experiences, wait a minute, everybody ain't my client. So you figure out a better way of vetting your clients. And then you put in better contracts, you ask for deposits or even full payments up front. So it's those crazy situations are actually blessings in disguise, because it makes you a better business person. So I feel you on that.
Yeah, so, I'll tell you one other big thing. Scope creep. I don't know if you've had that experience where it happens a lot, especially if you've been working with clients for a while, where they're like, okay, well, can you do a little bit of this? And then you do it because you're trying to provide service. And it's like, oh, you did that. So could you do this? And then you next thing you know, you're doing something entirely different than your contract. So that's, you know, there's so many things you learn, but you just like try to make sure that, you know, as much as we try to make sure that we're accountable and doing things that we're supposed to do, we got to make sure that our clients are also accountable too. So it's getting that, vetting them, but also making sure they stay vetted along the way too.
Right. Because with the in the example of that with graphic design, I used to not have limits on editing. You know what I'm saying? On the edits and the revisions. Wait a minute. If we do this revision, that's a totally different graphic. So you know what? That's a totally different job. We're going to have to get a whole other payment, you know? And so you learn those things because, yeah, some people will try it. Some people will try it. So I get that totally. What motivates you on the daily? What motivates you to stay in this game?
I think it's just like the, you know, it was always my vision of starting something, like I mentioned. And I always, you know, saw this as like what I was going to do. I think it's, you know, it's the challenge of it. And it's that it is hard. As much as you hate it that it's hard, you also love it because it's hard. Because I had a lot of people, and I still have a lot of people that come around and they'll say that, hey, you know, they want to start a venture or do certain things, but they ultimately don't kind of stick with it because it is hard. And it's not just like doing the work. It's like all the emotional parts. It's the imposter syndrome where you don't even know if you're good enough. It's the people that don't pay you. It's the changes in the industry where now, you know, like now in marketing, we have AI and all this stuff. So all these things are like things that you have to navigate. And I think that that's what, you know, that's what makes it exciting. But at the same time, it helps you, it makes you want to pull your hair out and just go crazy. But I think that just continuing to go on and you know that you are doing something, you are making an impact, and you are doing even like what your vision is, I think it just, it becomes more exciting. And now just like having a team and not having, I'm the only employee, but I have, you know, contractors and people that are on the team. And I think that it starts to become, you know, not just about what I'm trying to do, but also about, you know, like what other people are doing. And I think that I'm a highly creative person, so I have ideas for days. And I think that I also, what's exciting to me is like, okay, what's the next opportunity and the opportunity after that, opportunity like after that. And if I set it up right, then you have those multiple streams of revenue. You have the multiple ways that you're able to kind of, you know, feed your family, help other people feed their family and make an impact, leave a legacy, just all those things. Because I always want, you know, when it's my last, you know, day to be able to say that, you know, I built X, Y, and Z, but I'm remembered because of, you know, I think I've always wanted to be remembered for entrepreneurship and being able to provide that hope and be able to provide a way out of no way and be able to help people think of that. So I think that's what kind of gets me going more than anything else, is that I feel like I've been called to do it. And I feel like I'm going to, you know, figure out, you know, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and figure out the best way to make that happen.
I feel you. I like that. I like that.
All right, man. So like, what's on your playlist? What you ride to? What you listening at? What you got going on right now in your playlist?
So right now I listen to Christian rap right now because I got an 8-year-old son right now. So I'm listening to a lot of Andy Mineo, but when I'm in the gym, it's always the go back to the Jay-Z's, the Jeezy's. It's always like kind of the same type of, you know, music that I listen to. I don't really get down with a lot of the newer music as much, but you know, one of my favorite artists. And I got to go see him at the, I forgot what they called, they used to call it the Verizon Center, where the Wizards play, is J. Cole. So anything J. Cole, I'm definitely listening to. But yeah, that's, and I was a huge Lupe Fiasco fan, but that was like his mixtape stuff. So I always, you know, when I'm in the gym, I'm just kind of, I have my playlist that I'm leaning more into.
That's dope.
Okay, awesome. J. Cole. I feel you on that, the new stuff. I'm not really feeling the new stuff. Yeah,
no, we hate the new stuff. Just gotta put that out there, okay?
I can't say I hate it. I wouldn't even give it a chance. So I can't say I hate it yet. I tried.
It hurt my ears. I stopped.
I just posted about some of the new stuff because it's so funny. There's this female rapper. She got a song called Area Codes. And she actually said, you know, she had never heard a Ludacris song.
I was going to say that.
And I'm like, the hook is exactly the same. Really? And so what's so funny, I'm like, okay, yeah, she's 22 and it came out 23 years ago. Okay, no, she's 23 and it came out 22 years ago. So I let her slide, but you had a producer, you had a mixologist, you had somebody in that room.
Somebody on the team knew that song. Exactly.
You know, hey. And then look, and I played it for my 67-year-old mom and she said, that's Luda. If my 67-year-old mom knows, then come on, so.
Yeah. Hey. Damn, right there.
You know
somebody got Shazam on their phone. I know that. They can put that up. Like, exactly. Sounds the same.
Exactly. But so as far as you being successful, what do you see a success for an entrepreneur? And I believe you do, but do you consider yourself successful at this very moment?
I appreciate the things that I've been able to do, but like, I think I learned about myself, and I think this is probably the best thing that you can do is you know about yourself. Cause I think if you know about who you are and what you are and like how you, what makes you tick and what makes you go, you know, you're going to define success and however you define it. For me, like when I look at myself, like I appreciate the things and I've started to celebrate the wins a lot more than I did when I started, but I'm very much so like just my DNA is kind of like, you know, what's the next thing? And that could be very, very, you know, dangerous. Because you're never ever like fully fulfilled because you're always on like the next thing. I think Tom Brady, they were talking, I'm a big sports guy. So they asked Tom Brady like what his favorite championship was. And I guess he said that it's the next one. So it was never like that one. You know, you appreciate it, you go through the process, but you never are fully fulfilled. And I think that I used to try to fight myself for that. I used to beat myself up about like being that way. But I think that, yeah, I definitely, you know, done some successful things, but it's always like, I feel like there's still more that I feel like I'm just kind of scratching the surface. And I think that I need more and I could do better. So I always kind of challenge myself in that sense. And I think for, you know, everybody that's thinking about like how they define success as an entrepreneur, it doesn't have to be one way. Like I have my podcast is called the I Am CEO podcast. And at the end of the show, I have like set questions. It's laser focused. So it's not like as conversational as this one, which is what I love about, you know, this your show. But the last question I ask everybody, what does being a CEO mean to them? And the reason I ask that is because I don't want it to be in a box where your success, your definition of what it means to be a CEO, your definition of what it means to be an entrepreneur is the same as mine. And I'm wrong or you're wrong. Right. I want it to be like, hey, it's all about creating your opportunity. How do you see your life? How do you see this? If you're looking for a side hustle and you're going to work your 9-to-5, that's completely fine. As long as you know what it is that you're doing. If you want to, you know, have 100 million employees, you can do that. If you want to have 5, whatever it is, you define your success. So don't allow anybody else to tell you exactly what success is. Right. You get to define it for yourself and you get to pursue that on your way. So that's how I look at it.
Right. You're right. Because I tell people all the time, I had started this book challenge last year. And one of the books that I read was Tiny Business. And what I loved about it is the woman, she came up with the eco bag.
Elaine Kofeld.
Yes. So it within that, she still makes millions of dollars, but she only has about 15 employees. That was her goal. That is her success. It was never, she never wanted to be having 15,000 employees. That's not what, so it helped redefine the idea of success in my head. You know, whatever success is for you, it's for you. Don't make it feel that way. You know, somebody gave me flack once because I was saying that I wasn't looking to be a millionaire. Now, don't get me wrong. They twisted it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to reject being a millionaire. But what I'm saying is success for me is comfortability. As long as I'm comfortable, not sweating about what bills can be paid. If I go to the mall and I see something like I ain't got to calculate stuff. So as long as I'm comfortable, a six figure is fine. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying I don't have to. I'm not putting that pressure on myself. And we have to give ourselves grace. I'm big on that. We have to give ourselves grace. And like you said, you mentioned celebrating the little wins. And that's where I am, because I've been worn out. I took a 2-year break. I've been, you know, just like depressed to the point where I was not getting up out of bed because I wore myself out. So now I celebrate the little successes and that, and people come in my inbox and they tell me that I'm inspiring them and that, hey, I'm a success. Right there, I'm a success. So I feel you on that. I feel you on that.
Yeah.
So what's coming down the pipe? Like, what are your goals? What's the future look like for Gresham? Like, what's going on? What you got to go? Like, anything you're trying to achieve? What's going on?
Yeah, it's so funny you brought up that book with Elaine Pofield, because it's one of the reasons I started the podcast was because I had her on my longer form podcast, and she had wrote the $1 Million Business. And I wanted to basically redefine like what entrepreneurship means and what that looks like. So that was always my goal when thinking about like what I want to do, you know, in the future, was to not feel like I had to define myself by the amount of revenue that I brought in. Like you said, if you make $1 million, but your expenses are $1.2 million, then, you know, is that really success? You know, you're still kind of in the hole unless you're, you know, you're investing or doing whatever, but it's just us redefining that. So for me, like I always, anytime I wonder like what I should be doing or what steps I need to take in the future, I'm going back to that 10-year-old kid that started that family newspaper. So I'm trying to figure out like, how can I take that same kind of spirit and maybe, you know, translate it, mix it up, put it out into what this new world is and be, you know, true to me. So I'm really big into content, to media, and to, you know, the creation of content. So I'm, you know, looking at, you know, different ways and different kind of niche audiences that I can kind of create content around. Most recently, like on my podcast, I asked everybody for, I call them CEO hacks. And those are like apps, books, and habits that make people more effective and efficient. So the whole idea is that, you know, we sometimes take for granted the things that we do that make us more, you know, successful, whether it be like morning routines, you know, drinking, you know, water, praying, meditating, you know, working, whatever it might be. These are things that are like hacks. Are there books? Are there software you should know about? Mm-hmm. So I started to compile a lot of those from the episodes that I did. And I started to compile the ones that I use. And so like, I have a directory up and I'm laser focusing on like, not just listing them, but teaching people exactly how to use them. So that's one of the next things that I'm working on. But again, it's a lot of it's going to be that same spirit of, you know, how do I take media? How do I take content and kind of help people and make that impact? So that's a lot of, you know, what I'm, you know, planning on doing, you know, within the next year, but also years and years in the future too.
I love that. I love that. You mentioned the hacks. Are you touching on some of the AI as well? Because it's like, I tell people all the time, the only thing is everybody's jumping on ChatGPT, but you have to remember that its knowledge only goes up to 2021. So some of the trends, some of the questions that you ask are going to be limited, but it's enough to get you into what you're doing. So, but I love that. So, you know, some of the hacks that people need to know about, I would love to see if you did a book with that or something, you know, because there's so many ways. I was just telling my mom how, like, you know, for this podcast, you know, get Otter to do the translation. Take the translation, throw it into ChatGPT, and I got it going some content for me. You know what I'm saying? So there's so much things out there that can really help us. So I love that. I would love to see that list.
Yeah, definitely, absolutely.
Definitely.
That handy.
Okay. Awesome. So what's your one last final piece of advice for brand new entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I really think that the biggest thing, and then my favorite quote is, don't tell me the sky is the limit when there's footprints on the moon. And I know we've been talking around, you know, that idea, a lot of like, sometimes there's naysayers, there's haters, there's people that love you that maybe just have their own insecurities that they're dealing with. Right. But I think that, you know, it's upon any new entrepreneur, any old entrepreneur, anybody doing anything to say that, hey, the life in the world that you want, you have the opportunity to try to maybe not necessarily make it happen exactly how you want it to happen, but you at least have the opportunity to roll up your sleeves and put in the work to try to make it happen. And I think it's upon all of us to really figure out what that is, what our talents and our gifts are, and really lean more into that. So, you know, I just go back to that quote. I tell myself that quote often. I definitely told myself that quote when I was just started a lot, and I had it everywhere because everybody has their own reality in the way that they see things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be yours. And I think it's on us to make sure that that happens. So if you're thinking of getting started, if you are getting started, you know, if you're a long time along the journey, just lean more into that and understand that you get to create that opportunity.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Well, let our listeners know how they can find you, follow you, also your podcast and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a little hub of everything that I do, from the digital marketing to the podcast and everything. You can go to imgresh.com. That's imgresh.com. I have links to the lessons that I learned from doing 1600 podcast interviews. I have some of the SEO hacks that I've learned. Lots of information that hopefully, you know, you can read, but also if we can be of any help, definitely let us know too.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I had to sneeze. That's awesome. We're a baby compared to you. We're a baby. Oh my gosh. We're about to hit 50 interviews. So, but we're babies. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah, baby. I would say you're smarter than me, because when I get to the numbers, like, why did you go this far out? But I'm taking some time to hopefully get some more out of that.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
I appreciate
you. So many gems. You dropped so many gems. So I love it. I love it. I love it. And I'm from Maryland, so I know what areas you're talking about.
Okay. There we go. Awesome.
In today's economy, many are sitting with heavy questions about their careers, finances, and work-life balance. Maybe you're wondering if working two jobs is worth your valuable time and energy, or how to be more available to yourself and your family, or if now is the right time to make that career transition, career advancement, or jump into entrepreneurship. Hi, my name is Tara Hayslip. I'm the CEO of Grounded Energy 111, international best-selling author, and spiritual career mentor. I help entrepreneur women and corporate career women create soul-aligned careers around their lifestyles. If you are or have been feeling like you want to do more with your career by making that change, advancement, or start your own business, I invite you to my free monthly workshop, the Be a Boss Workshop, where you'll meet other women going through similar career transitions and experience an interactive group coaching workshop. For more information, follow me on Instagram at grounded_energy111, join the Grounded community through my link tree and my Instagram bio, check things out on my website at www.groundedenergy111.com, or email me at tara@groundedenergy111.com, and I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on social media as well. Join us next week when we speak with Dr. Nakia Smith, who actually started a women's retreat for fellow doctors as she went through needing to find her tribe and renewal. See you next week. Bye.
IRS notices can be intimidating, but waiting to act could cost you your valuable taxpayer rights. Don't try to handle the IRS alone. These agents are trained to track you into agreements designed to collect as much money as possible. Don't pay thousands of dollars to a marketing company claiming to be a tax resolution firm. Get behind the shield. The enrolled agents at Elite A-Tax and Financial Services are experts at tax resolution, protecting taxpayers' rights, and are federally licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. Elite A-Tax and Financial Services has the knowledge, skill, and experience to assist you with audit representation, liens, levies, offers and compromise, innocent spouse relief, wage garnishment, back taxes, and more. Don't lose sleep, time, or your rights as a taxpayer. Make your appointment today at elite8financial.com to schedule a consultation and get the IRS off your back. Get behind the shield.